We'll hear Senator Jacob K. Javits, New York Republican, facing the Fourth Estate, as Monitor picks up today's Meet the Press. Senator Javits is expected to play a prominent role in the Senate discussions of civil rights legislation, which begin tomorrow. First, before Meet the Press, Music to Sharpen Pencils by Alfred Newman. Now, Monitor brings you Meet the Press, the prize-winning interview program produced by Lawrence E. Spivak, with four of America's top news reporters ready for this unrehearsed news conference. Here's the moderator of Meet the Press, Ned Brooks.
Welcome once again to Meet the Press. The most important political battle of this session of Congress is scheduled to open tomorrow. Against the background of election year politics, the Senate begins debate on civil rights legislation. Our guest today is a leading figure in that battle, Senator Jacob Javits, Republican of New York. Senator Javits has been given two major assignments by the Republican leadership. He is to serve as liaison between the Republicans and liberal Democrats, and he is to be one of the floor managers on the voting rights issue. The chief source of controversy is now how best to protect the registration and voting by Negroes. Senator Javits has been an active champion of civil rights legislation throughout his 11 years in Congress, first in the House of Representatives, then in the Senate. He is a lawyer and former Attorney General of New York State. And now seated around the press table, ready to interview Senator Javits, are Richard Wilson of the Coles Publications, Frank Vanderlinden of the Nashville Banner, Anthony Lewis of the New York Times, and Lawrence E. Spivak, our regular member of the Meet the Press panel. Now, Senator Javits, if you're ready, we'll start the questions with Mr. Spivak.
Senator, you've been widely described as one of the Republican leaders in the fight for civil rights legislation. What isn't clear to me is this. Are you fighting for an administration bill, or are you fighting for your own bill?
I'm fighting for an administration bill because it has within it a great part of what I think ought to be civil rights legislation. I will also, in addition, fight for a few things which I think need to be added, like a provision for intervention by the Attorney General in suits to assert civil rights, and a provision for federal registrars, in addition to the provision of Attorney General Rogers for voting referees.
What do you mean by registrars in addition to? Have you a plan to combine the registrar and the referees, or are you going to have both registrars and referees?
I've got a plan being worked on now by a number of the law professors at Yale with whom I've conferred. They may be joined by professors of other law schools. The idea would be to leave the Rogers program undisturbed, but to introduce also the possibility of coordinating it with a simplified version of the provision by which the president could appoint federal registrars. I think that the two would do the job completely that needs to be done.
Can you give us a clearer idea of what your plan is going to be?
Exactly right. I'd be glad to. We all know the Attorney General's plan is to have the court where the Attorney General has started litigation to assert voting rights on the part of individuals, have the power to appoint a referee who will be able to register people and go and observe at the polls whether they're being permitted to vote. He's got to do that in the individual litigation, provided that a pattern of denial of voting opportunity is shown in that particular locality in that particular case. Now, what my proposal, again, I emphasize that I shall be first and foremost for the administration's proposal. But what my proposal, and that of others, I'm not alone in this, would add, would be the opportunity for the president in cases where no litigation has been started, where the job can be done without a litigation, to appoint a voting registrar as suggested by the Federal Civil Rights Commission. The voting registrar to have the power to issue a certificate to an individual who is denied the right otherwise to register, and then there being a criminal sanction in respect of the recognition of that certificate as legitimately entitling that individual to vote. Both, in my opinion, can work very well together.
Have you had any indication whether the administration will back your plan too?
The administration will not, in my view. And that is why I say the first job we all have, and that very much includes me, is to give priority to the administration package. That has administration backing, and the first thing we want to do is be sure that that's going to be law.
You think that the administration definitely will not back your plan?
One can never say anything final. Everything is possible, but it seems to be the position of the administration that the voting referee plan that I've described, the court plan of Attorney General Rogers, is as far as they want to go at this time.
Mr. Lewis.
Well, Senator, do you think realistically that any plan that is opposed by the administration has a ghost of a chance?
I do, Tony, and I think that it enables me to say to you that I think that there's never been a better opportunity in perhaps all of the 80-odd years, even including 1957, for civil rights legislation than now, and especially on voting, for two reasons. One, this is an election year. The eyes of the world are on us in terms of this issue. It is probably the number one domestic issue in the country. Today, it has enormous international ramifications. And in addition to that, and I think also very importantly, the time seems to have come when it's being widely recognized that at the very least, the voting rights should be secured. And hence, I think it's a question of implementation, and therefore I don't think you can rule out anything as impossible in circa 1960.
Now, Senator, it was just 1957, as you've mentioned, that Congress passed the first Civil Rights Act in about 75 years. Now the Attorney General is coming forward after having sponsored that act in part and telling us that he needs new powers, rather strong new powers, to enable Negroes to vote. And yet I think it is a fact that he has brought only four cases under the 1957 Act. Do you think that with such a meager record of testing the powers of that act that he is in a position to ask for new powers?
I do, and I'll tell you why, Tony. In the first place, in his package, he includes a number of things which are needed to enable him to test the powers he's been given. One of them, for example, is a preservation of voting records, which he doesn't have. A second is the opportunity to issue subpoenas in respect of preliminary investigations, which he doesn't have. Also, his experience has taught him that you have to have some more direct route than the normal suit in order to get people registered, or at least get them in the position where they can be registered in order to vote. And finally, I think we all understand that the problem is even more pressing than the remedies that he has been trying to carry out. He has been slow. I don't say that critically, because it takes time to organize this and get your staffing and get your representative cases. He can't bring every case. And so it's taken a little while to get rolling on that. But the problem, at the same time, is so marked, as the Federal Civil Rights Commission has pointed out. And these added remedies will be so useful in respect of dealing with it that I think he has a right to come in and ask for them, though he started relatively few cases.
Mr. Van der Linden.
Senator, the Civil Rights Commission says that about 618,000 Puerto Ricans live in your own home city of New York. And I quote from the Commission's own report here on page 67. The Commission says that many, in fact many thousands, of these Puerto Ricans are not permitted to vote in New York because they cannot pass the state literacy test. Now, my question is this. Since you are trying to make the southern states register Negroes who can't pass the literacy test, why don't you also demand that Congress repeal the New York literacy test, which requires every voter to read and write the English language?
Mr. Van der Linden, the little gimmick in your question, which gives the thing away, is the Negroes can't vote because they can't pass literacy test in the South. If that were true, there would be some, at least, the justification for your question, but it's not. The Federal Civil Rights Commission has found very clearly that Negroes are denied the right to vote, notwithstanding the laws of the southern states. They are denied the right to vote. Now, it is true that my state has a literacy test, a fairly simple literacy test, and the people of my state feel that a person should be able to read and write, at least in an elementary way, the English language. But in my state, the whole machinery of government is designed to enable these people to vote if they can pass a simple literacy test. They are not discriminated against with respect to whites. They're given every opportunity to attend adult education to gain this modest equipment in English. It seems to me that there the whole governmental machinery is directed toward helping them to vote, whereas in the southern states where the great complaint takes place, the whole governmental machinery is directed toward denying them the right to vote, even to registrars quitting their jobs so that they won't be in office, so that they don't have to register Negroes. That's found right in this report that you're reading from.
Well, Senator, the fact remains that if you can speak only Spanish and read no English, you can't vote in New York.
That is correct.
That's correct. Well, now, under the federal referee plan in your bill, these referees could register anyone virtually on his own testimony that he was able to meet the state qualifications, that is, an age and residence. I believe that's the way the House version of the bill has now been changed. Now, the state election official who did not let such a person register and vote could be put into jail on contempt charge without a jury trial, couldn't he?
No, because he could only be put into jail on a contempt charge if the punishment were under certain minima. That is the jury trial provision in the Federal Civil Rights Act. If memory serves me right, it's a 45-day sentence and $300, which are the maximum limits under which he would be subject to contempt. And those, I think everybody will admit, are not terribly serious penalties.
Mr. Wilson.
Senator Javits, the legislation you propose and the administration proposes that would apply to state and local as well as federal elections, is that right?
The legislation that I propose would apply only to federal elections. There is some question as to whether or not you could extend the federal registrar proposal to include state elections. You can extend the federal voting referee, that is the Attorney General's plan to include state elections. Now, therefore, I only point out that that is another reason why both remedies, it seems to me, could be very useful and very important. Because in some cases, all you have to do is assure federal voting. In that case, the registrar plan will work. In other cases, as the Attorney General has properly pointed out, if you only assured federal voting, you might be assuring Jim Crow voting. That is a separate ballot, a separate vote for Negroes, etc. In which case, only the federal voting referee plan would work out. Now, it's not a certainty that the registrar thing cannot apply to state elections. There are complicated legal questions, and I won't delay you by discussing them here. But it is a fact on the record that it's the federal voting referee plan that applies to state and federal elections. The registrar plan, at this time, applies only to federal elections.
And the administration supports the one which applies to state and local elections.
That's state and federal elections.
State and local and federal elections.
Yeah, may I just make that clear, Mr. Wilson, so everybody understands it. When we say a federal election, we mean an election for senator, member of Congress, House of Representatives, and a presidential elector. When we say a state election, we mean all the officers, governor, et cetera, elected
yes.
under state
law. The reason I ask those questions is because I wonder if it doesn't point up the basic issue, and that is the question of whether or not Negroes voting unrestrainedly according to their constitutional rights under the federal plan proposed by Attorney General Rogers, does that not, or does it, create a situation in which several southern states might be governed by Negroes?
I don't believe so. I think that I do not believe there is a Negro vote, quote unquote. Negroes vote in my community, for example, time and time again for people who are not Negroes, who are white, and often defeat Negroes because they just don't think the Negro measures up. I deeply believe that will be the case in the South, too. In addition, the population figures don't work out that way, with the possible exception of one state. I think it's Mississippi, perhaps someone on the panel will correct me, where there is a fairly close relationship, something like 40 or 45% of Negro population in the state. Everywhere else, it's somewhere in the 20% or 30% bracket, in many places even less. So that I do not believe that I think it's a scare word, but I do not believe that it represents anything that is within reasonable contemplation.
Sure,
some Negroes will be elected. There's a Negro member of the Atlanta School Board, and why shouldn't they be?
Well, I don't say it shouldn't be. I just ask you if you think it is would be wise at this stage in our development for a Negro governor to be elected in Mississippi, for example.
I do not believe the people of Mississippi, notwithstanding Negro votes, would elect the Negro governor unless he were a Negro of such type and caliber and character that he deserved to be elected. And that's what we're arguing
about.
Well,
congressmen, Negro congressmen are elected in Harlem, are they not?
A Negro congressman is elected in Harlem. I represented a piece of Harlem myself. Other members have districts which with very heavily Negro populations. For example, the congressman who represents the Bedford-Stuyvesant area in Brooklyn, the congressman who represents the East Bronx, they have very heavy Negro populations.
And a Chicago Negro district has been represented by a Negro congressman.
That is correct.
So why do you say a Negro governor might not be elected in Mississippi?
I don't say he might not be. I say he could be. I say it is unlikely.
You think it would be desirable?
If the man had the quality and the character and the standing superior to any white candidate, why not? I believe it would be. I wouldn't be an American if I didn't. Just because he's black, is that any reason why he should be demoted and denied the governorship if he's entitled to it?
Mr. Spivak.
Senator, the Republican National Committee in its House organ the other day charged that Senator Johnson, Lyndon Johnson, is a foe of civil rights legislation. Do you go along with that?
No, I do not believe so. I think Senator Lyndon Johnson is now got a bill of his own in. I don't think his bill has a great deal to it. He may come around to some of the other measures which are being proposed here. I would not like to class him as a foe, and I don't think one should. Now, how much of a friend he will be is a quantitative and a qualitative question. We'll soon find out, beginning tomorrow, how much of a friend he is, but I certainly wouldn't class him as a foe.
Well, Senator, you can't get civil rights legislation without cooperation from the Democrats.
That is correct.
And you're a liaison officer. Don't you think it's a mistake for the Republican National Committee to go about getting cooperation from the Democrats by charging the Senator Lyndon Johnson as a foe of civil rights legislation?
I kind of think, Ms. Spivak, the American people laugh those things off as a part of the political circus and don't, if the Democrats said it about me or anybody else on this or any other issue, they would smile, and I think they smile about this. This is legitimate politics. I'm sure it's based upon a voting record going back over the years where perhaps Senator Johnson, considering where he comes from and his background, voted against many civil rights measures. I have no doubt of that whatever. But as of today, it is my ardent hope that Senator Johnson will be a friend, not a foe.
Do you think, you say the American people will laugh this off. Do you think Senator Johnson is going to laugh this off?
Well, I think Senator...
And doesn't that open, may I finish, doesn't that open the Republican Party to a charge of using civil rights for political purposes in this political year when they make a charge like that against the senator?
I don't read those deep implications into it, Ms. Spivak, and I don't think that Senator Johnson will. He is a very sophisticated, floor leader, and I don't think that's going to phase him or stop him from doing whatever he thinks he ought to do.
Senator, I'd like to go for a minute to another question. It's been almost 6 years since the Supreme Court decision on desegregating public schools. Now, do you think the administration has done a good job in enforcing the Supreme Court's decision? Now, we're looking for new legislation. Have we enforced old legislation?
I think the Supreme Court, the administration has done a fair job in trying to deal with the desegregation of schools on a routine day-to-day basis. I think it's done an excellent job when the chips were down, as they were at Little Rock, as to whether our country should be anarchic or in order. In short, I don't say that it's white. I don't say that it's black. I think it's gray. And I think that the willingness, however, to include in the administration's civil rights package now certain provisions which accept the Supreme Court's decision and back it up marks a real step forward for which they're entitled to real credit.
Senator, you say now that it's done a fair job, but the not so long ago, you said that 6 out of every 7 Negro public school children in the 17 southern states live in school districts without a single integrated public school. Now, would you say that's fair?
I think that's rather a sad commentary upon the southern states themselves rather than the administration, which have sought by every subterfuge and every means of blocking the Supreme Court's decision to avoid its ultimate effect, which in my opinion is inevitable. I don't think that you can expect the Supreme Court, the administration, to perform a miracle in this length of time with the opposition of all those states. When I say it's done a fair job, I mean within the compass which is available to it. And that has a lot of limitations, as, for example, the pupils' placement laws, which the Supreme Court has approved, and I stand by the Supreme Court. You've got to stand by them all the way if you're with them, as I am in this controversy, but it certainly hasn't made the desegregation process any easier. It's delayed it by a considerable time.
Well, Senator, until the administration has learned how to enforce the present laws, do you think there's much point in trying to add new laws that they may not be able to enforce either?
I don't agree with that, Ms. Spivak.
It's just a question. It's not
as I said a minute ago, because I feel that as you go along in trying to do this job, you learn some of the things which are essential. And one of them the administration has learned is that the districts which wish to desegregate need some technical assistance, that you need law to bring about a situation where a violation or participating in a violation of an order of a court directing desegregation is a crime, and also where you need a declaration of the Congress backing up the Supreme Court, which is contained in the administration's package.
Mr. Lewis.
Well, Senator, don't you think it would have made a tremendous difference if from the beginning President Eisenhower had thrown his moral support to the Supreme Court school decision instead of saying repeatedly that he would refuse to take any position on the rightness or wrongness of the decision?
Mr. Lewis, I think the president has thrown his moral weight behind the decision. I think when he said that he refused to take any position on its rightness or wrongness, he was talking about the legal questions which are involved, which were raised by many of the legislators from the South. But where I think, and the reason I say that a fair job has been done, and I cannot give it a resounding 100% endorsement, is that I do not believe that all of the engines of government were fully employed in the process, and I think there the president has a legitimate feeling that the whole process will make more progress if you do not use all the engines of government forcefully. I disagree in that, but nevertheless, I respect his sincerity, and I think he feels this thing as keenly as I or anyone else who is in favor of it.
Senator, let me turn to what may be, if possible, an even more political subject than civil rights, the presidential campaign. You were quoted last November as saying that the problems facing the country today and in the forthcoming campaign were vastly different from those of 1952 and 1956. And that we ought to put in a new political team, as you put it, just like the Giants put in a defensive team and an offensive team. That was taken as a plug for Governor Rockefeller as a Republican candidate over Vice President Nixon. Well, now that Mr. Rockefeller is out, do you still think we need a new team in the White House instead of Mr. Nixon?
I think Mr. Nixon is that new team, assuming that his party elects him, his party nominates and elects him. It was a plug for Rockefeller, and I did feel that Rockefeller had unique qualifications in the economic struggle which we faced, and now it's beginning to be recognized, I must say, even 3 months later, that this is the big struggle which our country and the world is facing. I think Rockefeller had unique qualifications for that. I think Nixon has certain unique qualifications in regard to the anti-communist struggle, which make him a new team, too. And that's my reason for saying what I do.
Mr. Van der Linden.
Senator, you told a Republican rally in New York State just 4 nights ago, and I quote your speech here, that civil rights looms as the key issue upon which could hinge Republican success or failure in the 17 key states, which are of crucial importance to Republican Party chances to retain the presidency this fall. In view of that speech, isn't it correct to say that the Civil Rights Bill is really being pushed by members of both parties for the purpose of getting Negro votes in this presidential election?
I don't believe that's correct, Mr. Van der Linden, and for this reason. When you do something that's right, you have a right to claim political credit for it. This is the great tradition of our country, and that's what politics is all about. We expect the electorate to vote what a majority of them think is the right thing to do. How else do you get elected? Just because you have a nice face and comb your hair right? The civil rights issue is a deep issue. I want my party to give the hard core of the votes, which will do what needs to be done now. I know better than anybody else. That's the job I've been given, as the announcer said, that you've got to have a bipartisan approach to this matter. But a hard core of votes has to come from our side, and a hard core of votes has to come from the other side. I'm trying to marshal ours. And I think that when you do, the side which marshals it has a perfect right to get some political credit for doing it.
Mr. Wilson.
Senator Javits, let me get on to the political question, too. Do you think any activity for Governor Rockefeller will be renewed after the legislative session?
I don't see it, Mr. Wilson. I think Governor Rockefeller is a man of great character and sincerity. He's taken himself out of this, and I think he means it. And so I do not see a revival of activity. I think he has said he's out of it, and he is out of it.
Would you think he'd make a good candidate for vice president?
I think Mr. Rockefeller would make a good candidate for any national office of that character. But again, he said he's taken himself out of that.
You don't think he'd accept the vice presidential nomination?
I never would say anything was impossible. But I do not believe that there is any qualification to Governor Rockefeller's feeling about the campaign for the presidency or his eligibility for the vice presidency.
He wouldn't feel any Republican Party responsibility to run if it was felt he was the best possible nominee for vice president?
Well, that question has a lot of angles to it. If it was felt, and by whom, and with what degree of public support, and under what national emergency, that's why I say,
Senator, one can never say
impossible.
I'm sorry we don't have time for very many more angles. In fact, our time is up completely. Thank you very much, Senator Javits, for being with us.
And Monitor adds its thanks to Senator Jacob K. Javits, Republican of New York, and the members of the Meet the Press panel. Meet the Press is produced by Lawrence E. Spivak. And now, a personal word here, if we may. Do you know that 76 million captive people are fighting for freedom by listening to the truth? Yes, right now, as we speak to you, millions of people behind the Iron Curtain are caught in a flood of communist propaganda. These people once enjoyed freedom. Today, they're shut off from the free world. They cannot even get truthful news and information unless you help. You immediately question, how can you help? With the dollars that you send to Crusade for Freedom, dollars that help keep Radio Free Europe on the air. Those Crusade for Freedom dollars buy precious minutes of truth for millions of oppressed people behind the Iron Curtain. Your dollars help Radio Free Europe pay for the technical equipment and the personnel necessary to send out its programs and to combat communist lies. Your dollars, through their reception of those programs behind the Iron Curtain, help to build the will to resist communist oppression, to keep the spirit of freedom alive in the satellite countries. Remember, it's up to you to answer the call for help from those millions, 76 million people captive behind the Iron Curtain. You can give the gift of freedom to men and women. You can give the truth. Send your truth dollars for Radio Free Europe today to Crusade for Freedom in care of your local postmaster. No more addresses needed, just Crusade for Freedom in care of your local postmaster. And so saying, I find that time for me, for this week at least, on Monitor has run out. Parts of the preceding hour were pre-recorded. News follows in just a moment, and I hope we can look forward to meeting all of you at this same place, same time next week. Until then, may good fortune attend us both. This is Ben Grauer speaking. Thank you, and good night. Thank you.